Hi, everyone. Casey here. Danielle and I will release our normal bitch sesh episode on Friday, but today we wanted to drop an important episode of another podcast, Add to Cart, into our feed as a standalone piece. Our friends Kulap Vilaysack and Suchin Pak recorded this in the days following last week's horrific shootings in Atlanta, in which 6 of 8 people killed were Asian women, and after which the shooter was humanized in the news instead of being denounced as a white supremacist. This comes, of course, after increasing reports of anti-Asian violence and hate during the pandemic. I beg you to listen to this powerful and vulnerable episode. It delves into how centuries of anti-Asian rhetoric and laws and the sexualization of Asian women and white supremacy have impacted our society. And Kulap and Suchin beautifully open up about how this has impacted their lives and how this has always impacted their lives. I learned so much listening to my dear friends, and I hope that you will listen and bear witness and leave it feeling as galvanized as Danielle and I do to do our part to dismantle this system. And please note, at the time of recording, 2 of the female victims' names had not yet been released. They are Soon Cha Kin and Young IU. Enough of me, here's Kulap and Suchin from Add to Cart.
Also with that fire, boy.
Hey everyone, welcome to a very special and urgent edition of Add to Cart. I'm Suchin.
And I'm Kulap. So Tuesday night, March 16th, Robert Aaron Long, age 21, a white man who just hours before legally purchased a 9mm handgun, went on a rampage at 3 spas in Atlanta, killing 8 people. Today, at the time of this recording, he is charged with 8 counts of murder and 1 count of aggravated assault. 6 of the 8 victims were Asian women.
So far, as we're recording this, the names of some of the victims have been released. We will post more names as they continue to come out in the press. Names from Young's Asian Massage in Acworth are 33-year-old Delana Ashley Yuan, 54-year-old Paul Andre Michaels, 49-year-old Zhaoji Tan, 44-year-old Da Yo Feng, and Alicias R. Hernandez Ortiz, 30, was injured.
This is what police had to say this morning.
The suspect did take responsibility for the shootings. He said that early on once we began the interviews with him. He claims that these, and as the chief said, this is still early, but he does claim that it was not racially motivated. He apparently has an issue, what he considers a sex conviction, and sees these locations as something that allows him to go to these places, and it's a temptation for him that he wanted to eliminate. And he was pretty much fed up and then kind of at the end of his rope, and yesterday was a really bad day for him, and this is what he did.
If you go to Stop AAPI Hate, which is a great organization, you can start to see some of these numbers that are coming in. They have received almost 4,000 reports of anti-Asian hate incidents. There's a 150% increase in reported incidents in 2020 alone. That is just reported incidents. So you can imagine within those numbers what the actual real numbers are. Some of the headlines that you may or may not have seen in the past few months. There was an elderly man who was robbed in Oakland just recently. Some suspects have been arrested for brutally attacking 2 Asian men in San Francisco. Their photos, they're hard to see, are online. A college student in New York was left with 5 stitches after an attack in Brooklyn. The list goes on and on. I'm reading from just the headlines on another great resource and a site called nextshark.com. If you aren't getting these headlines, it's because you're not paying attention to the people that are reporting about this. It's not being reported as much in the national news outlets and media organizations. So it's up to us to make sure that we stay informed about what's really happening in our communities and in our cities. I want to say that the Stop AAPI Hate has just released a lot of numbers and findings and data around these incidents. The most reported hate incidents by states are broken down, California being the top, then New York and Washington and Texas. The list goes on. There are reports from every state. People of all races and ethnicities are targeted. This isn't one ethnicity within the Asian community. Women report incidents 2.3 times more than men. And 68% of incidents involve verbal harassment. Businesses are the primary site of discrimination. So these are just some of the statistics that we're looking at, some of the context that we wanted to give you for some of our listeners who may not be aware of where we are as Asian Americans, and you and I are, Kula, personally, as we sort of sit and watch this, as members of this community, as activists in this community, as storytellers within this community. We've talked about this before. We're continuing to talk about it, and there seems to be no end in sight.
I vacillate between despair and fury. And the evening of the incident, I could barely speak, Suchen. We've said over and over, we've cried out, stop calling COVID-19 anything other than what it is. Don't call it Kung Flu. Don't call it China virus. 4 years of a president who his constant dog whistling to white supremacists, who, in my opinion, a white supremacist himself, results in this. Mm-hmm. The sadness that I had last night became just full-blown rage. I could barely listen to this man speak so, to me, so conscious and caring to the perpetrator, to the murderer, that he had a bad day, okay? And it's, he's the poor thing just had a bad day, and this is what happened. And just hearing about him and how he likes pizza and he was a quiet boy, I'm just like, fucking enough. I don't want to know his name.
Yeah. We humanize the terrorists. We humanize the terrorists.
And it makes me so fucking mad to hear, first of all, any jokes at all, any sort of minimization of these victims because of where they work, what their occupation is, regardless of what they do. No one. Oh, God. Like, guns have more rights than sex workers do in this country.
Yeah.
And these women.
These mothers, these grandmothers. These
mothers, yeah.
They do this out of necessity, out of survival. They don't do it because it is a privilege that is offered to them.
And this ties back to a conversation we bring up over and over again, the lie of the model minority.
I think that, you know, there was a post I read, and I can't remember to whose credit it was, but I just remember reading it and like sobbing. And he posted that, you know, our parents, our grandparents, these women, they sacrifice, they make themselves so small. They walk so quietly. They try so fucking hard to be invisible. Just to survive. Just to survive.
Yeah.
And then this happens, and we have the audacity to blame them or to create a narrative that is so untrue and harmful and, like you said, minimizing to the pain and the struggle of so many immigrant families, so many Asian women that come here just to put food on the table.
And for the police to speak for him, for them to say, well, it's probably not racially motivated. It's because he has a sex addiction. He doesn't go to a strip club. He doesn't go to a sex toy shop, right? He goes to these businesses. He knows these businesses. He's frequented these businesses run and owned by Asian American women. But it's not about race.
Of course not. It's a random coincidence, I suppose. I mean, that I think, for me at least, a big understanding of the word gaslighting in the last 2 years, the vocabulary to which I've learned and am seeing. The term is, for me at least, how I internalize it, is that what you're saying is wrong. What you're saying is not true. And in fact, it's your fault. That layer is what the gaslighting for me is. It's not that you're telling me that my truth is a lie, but not only that, that it's my fault, that somehow I am responsible for the pain, and I'm also responsible to somehow solve someone else's pain, to somehow make it okay for somebody else to feel comfortable.
It's our fault that Asian women are being fetishized. That's our fault.
That's right. We have control over that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the fetishization of Asian women, these jokes, these images, me love you long time, sucky, sucky, I mean, on and on and on that we have grown up with, they're not just jokes. What they mask is misogyny, racism, violence, dehumanizing of a group of people. And then when you do that, you're allowed to eradicate them without moral conscience and without calling it what it is.
This is terrorism. It's sexism. It's racism. This is terrorism. That back to what you were saying about gaslighting, say what it is. Say what it is.
It's, you know, I remember I read this article about even the language that we use against, specifically around the violence against women, you know, and you know, the streets aren't safe. The nights are dangerous. The streets and the nights aren't killing women.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you know who is? Men, and mostly white men.
Yeah.
That have access to privilege, that have access to guns, that have access to a system that defends them and just even slightly gives them room for a soft landing. Those are the people. And so when you, even the language that we speak and the way that, call it what it is, don't tell me that the streets are dangerous. Tell me that men are killing women. Tell me that guns are killing women. Tell me that. Tell me that the white man holding the gun killed these Asian women. Be very fucking specific about the language that you use. Because when you don't use that kind of language, what you do is you eradicate the actual source of the pain and the violence. It's up to us to make sure that we continue to name the violence.
Yes. And it is hard not to get the message about who's protected here. That he was able to walk away, that George Floyd is dead because of some cigarettes. And this guy, three businesses, killed eight people, stopped on his way to do more in Florida, is alive and it's so loud and clear. It's just so loud and clear. Yes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, poor guy. Bad day. Bad day. We're all in a fucking pandemic. We all have had so many bad days, you stupid motherfucker. Like, I just, the police, it just further to me is like, policing is not the answer. Especially not for those businesses, and especially not for those women who may or may not be undocumented, who may or may not be sex workers. I'm so angry. Last night, all I could do was just like seethe and punch the air. And literally what I'm doing, and I am not ashamed to say it, I am on Twitter and I'm noticing people who are talking, what they're saying, and people who are not. And I'm saying this to even good friends of mine. You're on a clock. Before I either confront you or you're out of my life. I'm fucking serious about that.
You know, I digested this last night and I went to sleep and I woke up and again, you know, despair and sadness. And then I was like, okay, what am I going to do about this? You know, I have access to a contacts that have sway, that have influence, that have people that are famous, people that matter, you know, and I say those that, with quotes. And I wrote them an email because, Kulap,
yeah,
people outside of the Asian American community don't understand what's happening, the level of urgency and fear that is happening on a daily basis. And so I sent out that email and I felt kind of good. It was more of an email of like, let me educate you. Here's some resources. Here's some links, some books, some documentaries. Get informed about what's happening. And then I sat with it and, you know, I really don't like to, as we laugh and joke on this podcast about my personal habits, I don't like to share a lot of my personal stuff. And it, because it frightens me to put that out there for other people to take in different ways.
Yeah.
And so I've always kind of kept silent. And I woke up this morning thinking about those women, thinking about the jokes around them being sex workers, and thinking about the hate and this Asian fetishization of us and how it leads to violence. And all of this stuff started to connect. And I remembered and I shared a post, and I've never shared this publicly, of when I was at MTV, I had an incident where my coworker, after watching me on the news, said to a room full of women, look at her, that Asian sucky, sucky whore, something to that effect. And I was really young. And I want to remind myself, because I beat myself up a lot about this time. There was no social media, you know? I had no way of understanding or talking to anyone about what this was. And I went through this ordeal where I decided that I wasn't going to stand for that. Not for myself, but for the people in the room, the women in that room that were processing that it was okay for a man to speak in that violent manner, and that they were going to get away with it, and that I, as an Asian woman, was going to submit, swallow, and make myself invisible. And so it was months of an ordeal, and it was so traumatizing. But I think the most traumatizing thing that I look back now is everyone telling me it was just a joke.
Yeah.
Come on, can't you take a joke? You're being too sensitive. He says he's sorry. He's so sorry.
What you posted where someone, a superior, said, well, you know, it's his livelihood.
It's his livelihood.
You're asked to consider him.
Yeah, that's right. And I did. But at the end of the day, I had enough presence to understand that that wasn't my job, that putting that on me, that guilt on me, was part of this gaslighting.
Yeah.
You're taking it, you know, too hard. And then also, gee, you're going to get this guy fired? Oh my goodness.
That makes me so mad.
And so I connected that this morning for the first time in understanding how a joke like that leads to the death of six Asian women gunned down in a massage parlor. That's not a far leap.
No, it's not.
That's what we do. That's the language that we keep. That's the language that we say. And I have to say, while 99.9% of the comments have been so supportive and all of that, I didn't do it for that, obviously. I did it because I felt like if there was anything in here that someone in this kind of situation or in pain could take away from the story, then my God, take it. Because I don't... It happened so long ago, it's not like something I carry with me, but there have been comments that I've erased.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the comments was, 5-year-olds have said meaner things to him than what that man said to me. And I just, look at that and I feel such a sense of just sadness. You know, just like, this is where we are. And you think about this, Kulap. I think about all of these people, these victims that speak out, and how much hate and gaslighting that they get. And I know all those things are true, and yet I can remember, you know, that one comment. So,
I mean, to add to what you're saying and to go back to what the Cherokee Georgia police said of the content of what they were speaking of, the murderer doesn't get to say if he's racist. That's not for him to inform us.
Yeah,
it's his actions. Mm-hmm. Okay. So no matter how they say it, it's like he that's not for him to decide.
Yeah.
Just as it wasn't for this person to say to you, to erase your feelings, to speak of his experience and to lessen your feelings by saying a 5-year-old has said worse to me. Yeah. Like, you don't have the right.
Yeah.
You don't have the right. He had no right to say that to you. It's so maddening.
But it's, you know, and for anybody listening that is in any position of power, you know, I think that for me, the betrayal wasn't even from him, because he was kind of garbage from day one and everybody knew it. You know, he had a file really thick. Mine was just a small little annotation and just a list, a litany of complaints. It's the system, the company.
That upholds the status quo.
Right. He didn't just wake up that morning and become a racist, misogynistic asshole. He was a racist, misogynistic asshole from day one. And he had been there for years.
Protected.
And if I had said nothing about it, he would still be there, you know? Or he would have still had a career. So I say this is that it's all of it. It's not just on us either. It's also on all the people that hold any sort of power to create an atmosphere where this is the dialogue that's honored. This is the dialogue you listen to, right?
Somebody tweeted something that I thought was just, and I'm going to butcher it, but paraphrasing in a fake conversation of a male saying, you know, yeah, it's really tough these days. You know, I don't know how to talk to women in this Me Too era. And a woman replying, oh, yeah, since I was like 10, you know, I've held keys like I was Wolverine. But yeah, go on. Yeah, continue.
Yeah.
Speak on what you're talking about.
Yeah. Tell me about your pain.
Yeah. That's so hard. Yeah. How hard it is. All these bad days.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell me the last time that an elevator opened and you were in there by yourself and a man walked in and you had that instinct to get off of the elevator, everything in you, but you didn't want to come off like a bitch. You didn't want to be rude. You didn't want to like make someone feel bad. And so you sat with the terror of like going up. I mean, every woman has this story. Like, the elevator is like my greatest fear in life.
Well,
is to get trapped
Sujin,
in one of those or a parking lot or...
I have a dear friend who was assaulted in an elevator. You know, so it these aren't like a boogeyman covers. Like it's this is what we deal with and live with. Like
that's right.
So many I've just, you know, I can take a joke.
Yeah,
I can take a joke, Sujin. Yeah. I'm a funny person. I can take a joke, and I've forgotten so many of your jokes. Not you. So many people's jokes about who I am. I was sexualized as a very young person. I've been abused since I was very young. Like, this is what has happened here. It's not just, of course, it's not just Trump. It's systematic. It people have said this over and over again. The dehumanization, the racial stereotypes, the discrimination, the abuse of Asians is not new in America.
Yeah.
From the Chinese Exclusion Act, from, you know, what's happened to in my homeland in Laos, and the how many people Americans have bombed and killed in Southeast Asia. You know, I don't talk about Vietnam War, the secret war. We talk about the war in the Philippines. We can talk, you know, and what's done here, both, like, the brutalization. And it's just fucking enough is enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's enough. And I need people to educate themselves.
Yeah.
And I need people to listen. We've been saying for years, make him stop. How many Senator Suchin couldn't sign Grace Meng's bill? All those Republicans. It's their fault, too.
Yeah.
Blood on their hands.
Yeah. I mean, blood on so many people's hands that this is happening. And I think that the reason why, I mean, at least for me, the heart palpitations and the panic attacks, and we've talked about this, is that, you know, they're attacking our parents and our grandparents in broad daylight.
Yeah.
And killing them. And we're all stuck in our houses, unable to even do anything about it. The personal level of fear and helplessness is immobilizing on a good day. And then on a bad day, it's just an abyss of dark emotion. So it's something about seeing these women.
These women who are, you know, relatively around our age, do you think they had a choice not to go to work?
Yeah.
Do you think that they had the ability to stay home? The answer is no. They had to work.
So what do we do with all this? I mean, we're still processing it, as you can see from our ramblings and... we have some things that you know, we can share with you guys and we can share with one another. I mean, that's all we, yeah. I mean, I think we should just do that, right?
Yeah, there are, I think it's really important to support and highlight and amplify the work of local organizations and Atlanta-based resources. Including the NAPAWF, which is the National Asian Pacific American Women's Forum. So they do direct their advocates to support immigrant Asian women, worker, and reproductive rights in Georgia. There's also Advancing Justice Atlanta, and of course, Advancing Justice nationally as well. They're the first legal advocacy nonprofit dedicated to the civil rights of AANHPI in Georgia and the Southeast. And also a group that I'm really familiar with is the Asian American Advocacy Fund. They are at Asian AAF. They're a grassroots 501c4 social welfare organization. And they did a lot of work getting out the Asian American population to vote.
I've been doing a lot of reading and watching. There are two books that come to mind, Minor Feelings by Kathy Hong Park. It's such an amazing read.
Yeah.
If you want to know about Asian rage, this is a good place to start and why we're so angry. The other one that I was thinking about was we had met Chanel Miller, Know My Name, which it just kind of popped into my head as we were talking about this and the erasure of women and Asian women. That's such a beautiful book. I recommend that. And then I have been watching this incredible PBS documentary on Amazon called Asian America. It's 5-part. It goes from the very first Asian immigrants to land here in America and just goes through the entire history of Asian America. As we all know, U.S. history is taught through a very specific lens. So for me, I think that I've been finding words to even articulate what I'm feeling, because I don't have the words often. You know, I'm sort of fumbling around for them. And
same.
Yeah. So I think it helps to understand where the history of it and to understand the actual articulation of what we're trying to say.
I think there's a great article. It's an opinion article from Elle, and it's Ignoring the History of Anti-Asian Racism is Another Form of Violence. It's written by Dr. Connie Woon. Connie Woon, PhD, is a co-founder of AAPI Women Lead, they're also somebody you should follow as well. But it does give a lot of, and really an overview of what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
I also want to mention some general orgs. too. Red Canary Song is a New York City-based org that aims to advocate for migrant sex workers, support migrant leadership, and fight against unjust policies. Also, we talk about them a lot, but at Stop AAPI Hate is a necessary follow. At Gold House Co., our friends at Hate is a Virus. And also at AALDEF, which is the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund.
So for all of our Asian, you know, community members, you know, we sit with you in grief and in sorrow and in pain. And for anyone sitting outside of this community, shame on you if you are not speaking out on this, if you're not educating yourself on this, if you're not reaching out to one person in our community today to show support, to lend just a kind word.
If you're not talking to your own family members and people in your life about this.
That's right.
Advocating for us. Shame on you.
You know, we're Asian anti-shaming all over the place.
We're pointing our fingers.
Yeah. But we're doing it because you need to do it.
That's right.
And it means, and the impact is enormous. So,
I mean, Suchin and I, if Asian aunties, but I know you both, the big thing that we identify is big, we're older sisters, we're firstborns, yeah. Right? Yeah. Even with, you know, all of my half siblings, I am still the biggest sister. And again, I really want to reiterate what Suchin said. It's like, for my little brothers and little sisters there, we hold and love you and see you. You are not invisible. We will get through this.
No, we are. And I mean, I see this, you know, in myself, this old crotchety Asian person that doesn't like to share anything. I woke up and it's the first time I ever felt like sharing in my pain. And I think it's because I've been seeing so many of these stories coming and people sharing. All of that matters. You think that it doesn't, but it really, really does.
It does matter.
Yeah. And so anyway, we wanted to get this episode out, you know, before our regular episode because we felt it was urgent. I also want to say thank you to Lemonada, who suggested that we do that, you know? And that's what I'm talking about is
yeah,
this is the community that we should be pouring our energy into. It's the community that supports us, and it's the community that we live in, it's the community that we're from, but it's also the community that supports us. So I do want to say, I do feel very touched that we've been given this space to do that in the platform.
Yeah.
And I also want to say that that I am so grateful for your friendship, because in large part, I think me not being so silent, just in general, because I think I have been, is because of you. And also I'm scared of you. And if I don't do it, I feel like you'll say something. But it's a good kind of fear because it makes you a better person.
How dare you make me laugh? How dare you?
So we leave this on a silly, happy note, a hopeful note, because ultimately that's also part of who we are.
And I also want to say, you know, I'm so grateful for your friendship. And also you really do help me have words.
I mean,
truly, like sometimes, like yesterday, I just was like, it just like, oh, well, what I feel right now is violence. I feel like violence. And that is what I, you know, and I think you have such a grace about you. And when you posted that, I knew what that took. I knew that wasn't easy. I knew that's not something you would ever do. And the fact that you did that, I just see you. And I really, really, really appreciate you.
Thank you. And I want to say one, it's like, and then one more thing. I think about my 20 young year old self
And I remember that time. Cool up.
Yeah.
And I never got, and I still never got to hold that, you know, in the strength that I am as a person today, because something like that wouldn't have gutted me in the same way. But I'm telling you, I was gutted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I never dealt with that. And so it feels really good to complete that for me, because I'm totally complete today on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And in sharing that today, I did not think that I would feel this immense sense of relief. I had no idea that I was carrying that sadness. So part of that has been this podcast. Part of that has been your friendship. And a lot of that has been just the outpouring of love from the people that have joined us on this shopping show. So anyway,
add to cart,
there it is.
Add to cart.
Yeah. All right, well, regular episode coming after this one, but it was good to share.
Yeah.
Add to Cart is a production of Lemonada Media. Our producer is Claire Jones, and our editor is Ivan Kirev. The music is by Wasabi and produced by LA Made It, and Oh So Familiar, with additional music by APM Music. Executive producers are Kulap Vlysak, Sujin Pak, Jessica Cordova Kramer, and Stephanie Whittles Wax.
Be sure to check out all the items we mentioned today on our Instagram at Add to Cart Pod.